third hour on this gorgeous Wednesday afternoon here in Middle Tennessee. I mean, absolutely gorgeous. Darren McFarland, Willie Donick, Chase McCabe with you, now joined by Mike Florio. Pro Football Talk, he now joins us. Mike, how you doing?
Doing great. How are you?
I'm doing fantastic. You know, Mike Vrabel wrapped up mini camps last week. We played his press conference live because it was during our show as they were going to go away for 5 weeks and then get ready for training camp. But I had the under on vaccination questions, so that was a losing ticket. It was the over on number of questions that he got on vaccinations. As you could tell, the coach really was ready to move on past the vaccination questions. But in all seriousness, how big of a deal is this around the league? And you've seen how the league is going to handle this. And they can't make these players get vaccinated, but they've kind of laid out the parameters. Okay, if you choose not to, this is how you will be treated and what you will have to do. How do you think the players will use these next 5 weeks? Maybe the players who are on the fence or don't want to, do you think they're going to be thinking about this going into training camp, or how do you think that'll be handled?
Well, as of Friday, 55% of all players had been vaccinated. And I think the hope has been that as the players realize on their own what the advantages are of being vaccinated, the disadvantages of not being vaccinated, they will come to the conclusion that they should do it. And it's very different than the usual approach we see from a football coach. I thought it was funny when Matt Rhule, the Panthers coach, said, "I'm not going to tell anyone what to do." My first thought was, that's kind of your job. That's what a coach does. He tells people what to do, and there's a real strategic component here. It's going to be easier for the individual. It's going to be easier for the team if guys are vaccinated. It's 2019 rules, not 2020 rules, and if one team has everyone vaccinated, it's a lot easier for them to bond, to have the right camaraderie, to not have the issues and distractions that go along with meetings and masks and daily testing and just everything that can get in the way of what you're trying to do. And that's why I think the Steelers are one of the teams that have almost everybody vaccinated, because Mike Tomlin, the coach of Pittsburgh, is able to go to his guys one by one and say, this is what you need to do, and they do it. And some of the coaches are fearful that they're touching a third rail if they start telling guys that they need to go get vaccinated for competitive reasons, because so many people feel strongly about not getting vaccinated, either because the players don't care about getting COVID or because they're worried about magnetic crystals or computer processors in the vaccine, even though plenty of players will take plenty of things to keep them on the field without giving a second thought to the side effects or what's really in the thing that they're taking, if it means it keeps them on the field. And that's what the vaccine does. It keeps them on the field.
Do you think there truly is or will be a competitive advantage for those teams like the Steelers and others who basically have their roster vaccinated, as opposed to, let's say, a team that's hovering around 60%?
Oh, absolutely. I mean, you think about not having to have those guys who aren't vaccinated get tested, not having those guys in masks, not having the chapter and verse COVID protocols that need to be followed to the same extent. And I frankly think the league office is going to be unforgiving in its enforcement of those rules, because the league wants the process to be enough of a pain in the butt that guys will choose to get vaccinated. And I think once they really process it, and I think part of it is, the five stages of grief, anger, denial, bargaining, depression, and acceptance. I think we saw some guys act out last week a little bit, whether it was Joe Mixon of the Bengals, Cole Beasley of the Bills. You vent, you get it out of your system, and then maybe you eventually come around and realize, I just need to do this, or football season is going to be a major pain for me. And I think that's what the NFL and the union have set up here. I think the union wants guys to get vaccinated. The union just doesn't want to be in the position of telling guys that they must go get vaccinated.
Mike Florio on the line with us for Pro Football Talk. In the last 24 hours, Mike Carl Nassib has come out as the first active NFL player to come out and say that he is gay on Instagram. Yep. What was your reaction, and what have you made of the reaction, around the league, other players? And I think he had the number one selling jersey on Fanatics in the last 24 hours. What did you think?
I think the way that the Michael Sam situation was handled 7 years ago probably prompted most players who are gay, and obviously There are people of every sexuality in every walk of life, in every workplace, whatever job it may be, they're there. And I think that players who are gay probably decided, after Michael Sam, there's no reason, there's no benefit, I'm just going to live my life. And I suspect there are plenty of openly gay players, at least open among their teammates. You know, nobody's going to publish a story on TMZ outing someone. Those days are long gone. You could just live your life. For Carl Nassib to stand up and announce his sexuality, it takes a lot of courage, number one. And number two, it pushes the NFL closer to the point where it's not even a news item. It's nothing that anyone stops and thinks about. It's nothing anyone cares about. And I hope we get to that point. Just like with the number of female assistant coaches in the NFL, it's a big story for the first one. It's less of a story for the second one. And hopefully we get to the point where it's not even a story. It's just this person got hired for this job, and the gender is immaterial.
As you can imagine, in this market, the Julio Jones trade has created quite the discussion piece in this market. And so I want to ask you, because we set over underlines on catches for this season for Julio Jones and A.J. Brown and Derrick Henry carries and everything. But I want to focus on Julio Jones, because I did not think that it was going to be kind of a split. I mean, a kind of a house divided. And I'll just let you know, but the over-under that I set on catches was 79.5 for this season. And I took the over, and I thought everybody would take the over, and boy, was I wrong. Like I said, it's a house divided. It seems like, depending on who you ask, there are people that think that he will definitely be the Julio Jones that we've seen basically his entire career, and others think that his numbers will be down. Right now, one, what did you think of the trade the Titans made? And two, what do you think Julio is bringing to the table to the Titans?
Well, I wasn't surprised by the trade, because a week or two before it happened, the prevailing thought in league circles was that Julio Jones was going to end up a member of the Titans for a second-round pick. And there was some extra draft compensation on the back end in order to make the Falcons think that they got more than what they got for Mohamed Sanu in 2019 and what they turned around and gave to the Ravens for Hayden Hurst, the tight end that they traded for. They thought Julio Jones should get a first-round pick. The dynamics of, number one, his cap number, his salary, guaranteed salary, his desire to get a new contract, which will happen if he has a big year in 2021. I understand what the Titans are doing, but what it does is it raises the bar. It's no excuses. You've got four great players at three important positions, two great receivers, great running back, great quarterback. It reminds me of the Colts when it was Peyton Manning, Edgerrin James, Reggie Wayne, Marvin Harrison, the Rams when they had Kurt Warner, Marshall Faulk, Isaac Bruce, Torrey Holt. To have two receivers that you can't double both of them all the time, somebody's going to be open, but there's still only one football. So I think that's why there would be a concern about Julio Jones getting 79 catches. I'm not worried about health. I frankly think that hamstring injury, I don't know this, but I think the hamstring injury last year, he was in a situation where they were competitive and he was happy and he knew he was going to be there, he may have played through that injury. Hamstring is something that, you know, if you just aren't into it and if you aren't up to it, there's no reason doing it, because you're going to risk further injury. And I think it's the kind of injury that maybe in Tennessee he would play through. And I'm not concerned about him from a health standpoint. I come back to there's only one football, and we've got a new offensive coordinator in Todd Downing. You need to hope that it all works and it all clicks. And like I said, the bar is high. There's going to be an expectation that this offense is great right out of the gates, and it may take some time.
Mike Florio is with us, ProFootballTalk.com. And Mike, what do you know about Downing? We're all trying to get to know him here. He's been here, but he's been behind the scenes, and now all of a sudden he takes over the keys to this, you know, Ferrari or whatever you want to call the Titans offense. High expectations for sure, and some big challenges. What's your thought on his background and his readiness for this?
Well, you know, he was the coordinator of the Raiders team that was 12-4, and Derek Carr was in the MVP conversation until the Thursday night game against the Chiefs, where I think he kind of fell out of that discussion. And then Carr suffered the broken leg Christmas Eve 2016, and that 2016 it was, and that's what kind of washed things out for the Raiders that year. And Downing ended up gone when John Gruden came back, and And he had this kind of this dramatic fall where he went back to Minnesota, his home state, and had a low-level job there in 2018 and then landed in Tennessee last year, I believe, or the year. I can't remember. The timeline's not 100% firm in my mind, but he spent a short time in Minnesota again with a low-level job, had a low-level job initially with the Titans, and now, boom, here he is. Hey, offensive coordinator. He's been one before, but, you know, you've got some pretty good players that are being entrusted to your offense, and it's going to be a challenge to incorporate everyone, to get the most out of everyone. And, you know, it's not about saying, well, this is my system. It's about saying, these are my players, and I'm going to design my system to get the most out of my players. And, you know, there's reason to be optimistic, but we just have to see how it plays out. I mean, Vrabel trusts him enough to give him the job. That's a good sign, but we just have to see how it plays out.
You will have great perspective on this, and we seem to be kicking this around a lot on our show. We know the standard is the Kansas City Chiefs in the AFC. It's also a very deep conference where you start listing teams that are all really good. The Titans are somewhere on the list, but in your mind, what they've done in the offseason, particularly now this move with Jones, how far is the gap between the Chiefs and them?
I'd say it's still fairly significant because the Chiefs went out and put the pedal to the metal to try to address their weaknesses, whether it's offensive line, whether it's picking up Jerron Reed, who they got for a steal when his situation imploded with the Seattle Seahawks. So I think the Chiefs will be better than they were last year, which is kind of scary because other than the Super Bowl, they won every game they wanted to win except the game against the Raiders. The loss to the Chargers week 17 was a meaningless game that Patrick Mahomes didn't play in. So the Chiefs are still the platinum standard in the AFC, and everyone else is chasing them. But the Titans inch closer into the discussion, into the conversation. And, you know, maybe they eventually get another crack at the Chiefs in the AFC Championship. And as you guys well know, that was a game where the Titans led by double digits twice in the first half in the 2019 AFC Championship. And somebody's going to emerge, whether it's the Ravens, whether it's the Bills, whether it's the Chargers, whether it's the Steelers or the Browns. But the Titans now, neck and neck, I think the betting odds at PointsBet went to both the Colts and the Texans plus 110 to win the division. So they're exactly in the same spot. And it's going to be a hell of a battle to see who wins that division. But whoever comes out of that division may be in great shape to compete with the other teams in the AFC. But still, somebody's got to hope that they catch the Chiefs flat-footed, like peeking ahead to a rematch with the Buccaneers in the Super Bowl or something like that, and maybe you can disrupt it before they get there.
We're talking to Mike Florio, Pro Football Talk. And what team do you think, whether it's AFC or NFC, that was a playoff team but a legit contender? I'm not really counting the NFC East last year. What team are you worried the most about taking a step back? Is it Pittsburgh? Is it Baltimore? Like, how would you answer that?
Well, it's easily the Green Bay Packers if Aaron Rodgers doesn't show up. And even if he does, he's sufficiently disgruntled, and that storyline will be significantly large this year that could create a distraction and a disruption, and the team that was 13-3 each of the last 2 years could see a setback. They have a new defensive coordinator in Joe Barry. We'll see how he does with that defense week one against the Saints. If Jameis Winston ends up being the starter for New Orleans, last time Joe Barry saw Jameis Winston, he hung 55 points on the Rams when Barry was on the staff there in 2019. So the defense is going to be significant, and this Rodgers situation, obviously, if he's not there, scratch him off the list as a high-end contender until they prove otherwise. If he is there, it still raises a question. The Steelers, I don't know why they brought back Ben Roethlisberger. I thought it was time to move on. I think the Steelers got themselves convinced that if they just address this area, this area, this area, they'll be fine. And maybe they will. But I worry about Roethlisberger's body breaking down at 39. He had the elbow thing 2 years ago. Last year, his knees were shot by the end of the season. And now there's an extra game to play, and he's another year older. And I've said all along, I think by the end of November, both sides are going to regret that Roethlisberger came back for another year. So I think Steelers and Packers are two teams that I would watch very carefully.
So how do you think this Rodgers thing does play out? I know Devontae Adams said that the Packers players aren't really talking about it. He's not there. They're just doing their thing. But do you feel like that he is going to start week one in Green Bay or elsewhere, or just continue to sit out?
I think he'll show up in Green Bay and he'll play one more year. And there was something that Matt LaFleur, the coach of the Packers, said last week at a press conference on the way out the door for the offseason program. I watched it and it caught my eye, caught my ear as well. He was asked why they have four quarterbacks for OTAs. And it's a fairly basic question, because even though Jordan Love's taking the first-team reps, you've got a bunch of individual drills. You need arms to throw the ball to all those guys on the roster that are trying to run routes and catch passes. But what LaFleur said was, as we get closer to training camp, we may be making some moves. We'll have more clarity as we get closer to camp, whatever the case may be. And it made me think, number one, LaFleur knows what Rodgers is going to do, because why wouldn't Rodgers tell him? He's not mad at LaFleur. And number two, LaFleur knows that Rodgers is showing up, and he stopped short of letting the cat out of the bag. And that was the moment that I thought, even though Rodgers is all in with creating this beautiful mystery and keeping everyone guessing and reserving the right to say, what's the big deal? Why is everyone looking at me? Even though he wants everyone to pay attention to him, I think he's going to be there because he doesn't have any other option. And he's got maybe 4 years left. Is he going to give up 25% of his remaining career just because he doesn't like the boss? The point I've been making for the last 2 weeks, who likes the boss anywhere? I mean, at any job, all the way up to upper management, who likes upper management? You guys don't have to answer that. I for the record, like upper management at NBC. But so what? How many, you know, if you love your coworkers, and he said that, I love the teammates, I love the coaches, I love the fans, okay, then he'll be there.
Mike, last one on my end. We've talked about the trade that John Robinson made for Julio Jones, but looking at his tenure since he's been the general manager of the Titans, he's never been afraid to be aggressive, to make those moves, but we've also seen some moves that he's made, whether it's free agency or draft picks, they've been bad, and they've been very bad, and those are going to count on his resume. When you evaluate his job overall, how do you look at John Robinson?
Well, I think it's still incomplete. It's still a mixed bag, and this Julio Jones thing could be an all-in move to try to rectify some of the mistakes. I mean, last year, first-round pick completely wasted on a guy who never played and never will play in the NFL. So I know there's an element of roll of the dice with everyone that you take, but, yeah, at some point you get judged on your results, and we'll see. You know, I just wonder how all in everyone was on the pursuit of Julio Jones, because it really does raise the bar. It raises expectations. And if it fails, the team doesn't become a Final Four team, it creates more potential scrutiny for everyone as well. So I just wonder if everyone really wanted to do this, and if Robinson saw this as a way to throw kind of a Hail Mary and get past mistakes to be forgotten. You know, they took a hell of a risk with Bud Dupree, and yeah, it's a real contract with real guarantees. Usually when a guy's coming off an ACL tear, the way it's structured is the team's got an out, a pretty easy out after 1 year. And I may be remembering incorrectly, but because a bunch of deals were coming through at the same time. But I remember looking at Bud Dupree's contract and thinking, oh, my God, this is a real contract for a guy coming off a torn ACL. So they're taking a lot of risks. At some point, the risks got to pay off, or upper management will have a problem with the employee instead of the other way around.
Yeah, absolutely. Mike, we appreciate it. It's always good to talk to you, and hopefully we'll do it again soon.
All right, take care, guys.
Mike Florio, Pro Football Talk, NBC, does a fantastic job for them, and a lot of NFL stories. And again, Tim Hasselbeck usually joins us on Wednesdays at noon, but off this week, and we'll return next week. So we'll get into more on some of the things you just heard. But Willie, you're going to tell us about Loan Pronto.
I'd be glad to do that. Great stuff with Mike Florio. And just a quick reminder, if you miss any of our interviews, we have them all in podcast form. So always keep that in mind. Just wherever you get your podcasts, you can subscribe to Darren, Donick, and Chase. Just search it that way. So many great interviews that we have around the calendar, including that one with Mike Florio. That was excellent. It's great to catch up with him. Loan Pronto, my message today is going to be directed at the veterans out there. I know there's a lot of you out there, and if you have a VA home loan, stop and listen to this message I'm about to tell you from Loan Pronto, because you can refinance now and snag a new rate in the twos. Yes, in the twos, and that's an important thing. That's going to save you money. It gets even better. You can do all this with no appraisal, no income documentation, and no cash due at signing. Mortgage rates have come down, and veterans need to act now. Loan Pronto specializes in VA streamlined loans. They can even cover all of the closing costs, and you'll love all. They're all digital, no-hassle process. It's going to be so much easier for you to get this done. Most loans close in 14 days. So call Loan Pronto now or go to loanpronto.com. They also have options where you can refinance, get cash out of your home's equity up to 100% of its value, get cash to pay off credit cards, or do that home improvement project. So veterans, listen up. And really goes for all of you. Call Loan Pronto. Find out what they can do for you. They've got a great process to offer you. 615-499-5780 or loanpronto.com. That's 615-499-5780 or loanpronto.com. Equal housing lender. NMLS 1661781. Subject to lender approval. Not all loans eligible for zero costs.
It creates more potential scrutiny for everyone as well. So I just wonder if everyone really wanted to do this, and if Robinson saw this as a way to throw kind of a Hail Mary and get past mistakes to be forgotten. You know, they took a hell of a risk with Bud Dupree, and it's a real contract with real guarantees. Usually when a guy's coming off an ACL tear, the way it's structured is the team's got an out, a pretty easy out after 1 year, and I may be remembering incorrectly, but because a bunch of deals were coming through at the same time. But I remember looking at Bud Dupree's contract and thinking, oh, my God, this is a real contract for a guy coming off a torn ACL. So they're taking a lot of risks. At some point, the risks got to pay off, or upper management will have a problem with the employee instead of the other way around.
There you go. Piece of our conversation with Mike Florio from Pro Football Talk. By the way, you heard the Nashville SC promo coming back from the break. If you're looking for something to do tonight from 5 until 7 p.m., getting ready for that match, you can go to the pre-match party at Hard Rock Cafe downtown. Party before the match on Broadway. Get some swag. Get some game swag. Be particular there. Register for a pair of tickets to an upcoming Nashville SC home game, and then head on over to Nissan Stadium for the 7:30 match. Get your tickets now for Nashville SC at NashvilleSC.com. And don't forget, you can listen on 94.9. Back here on Darren, Donick, and Chase, you just heard Mike Florio talking about John Robinson. What did you make of the risk-taking? And certainly we've talked about that on the show. And
yes,
more risks have been taken. And right now it's a mixed bag. I would say more misses than hits. We know Jeffrey Simmons was risk-taking, and that's been a hit. That's worked. Others have not. But the question is the first-round pick this year, that's a risk. Is Caleb Farley going to be worth it? Is Bud Dupree, who, you know, I guess he's going to be ready for training camp? By the way, do we have a good idea of knowing whether he's going to be ready for training camp or not?
I don't know.
Yeah, I don't either.
It's a good question.
I mean, that's not vitally important. What's vitally important is for 17 games in this regular season, Bud Dupree is on the field and he's a factor.
I think Dupree and Jones are the central focus of what he was talking about. Those are big macro moves. But I would look at it this way. When you're saying, is it risky? Yeah, I mean, but as we talk about a lot when we get into this topic, there's risk in everything you do, especially in football, right, where everything you've invested in your best players, it can go completely south if any of those guys get hurt, right? There's always a risk that could happen. But when you're trying to beat the Chiefs and you've got a quarterback Ryan Tannehill's age, you know, it's not like he's 25, right? He's getting up there. He's in his 30s. It's time. He's in the prime, right? You've got to strike while he is as productive as he's ever been in his career. You've got Derrick Henry in the prime of, you know, what he is, which is one of the ultimate weapons at the running back position, one of the rare guys in today's game that physically takes over a game. Why wouldn't you take risk to go after a Bud Dupree or a Julio Jones? It's like, if you're not going to do it there, then you sit there and say, well, can that team really beat the Chiefs? Like, how else could you beat the Chiefs other than try to take a little bit more risk to play for this year, next year? Like, you know me, I'm always looking at big picture beyond this year. You guys are the live in the now. You guys were hitting me with that speech earlier this week. But and I, because I think it's smart to look, you got to look ahead some. But I really think at this point, you've got a chance for these next couple years to have a really good team. The problem is you might have one of the best teams of the era that you have to get through just to get to the Super Bowl.
Yeah, but I mean, that to me,
so you got
to
load up. You got to load the wagon. Right, it's worth the risk.
To me, that's even more of a reason to risk it. You know, no risk it, no biscuit. That's what they say. I mean, I think I was curious of Mike's answer on just the overall view of John, and that was, I mean, his answer was pretty much kind of what I thought it would be, that he's viewed as somebody that he's willing to make the risk, but are they going to work? And there's been some moves that he's made that just simply have not worked, and are they going to be the ones to ultimately come back to bite him? You know, if Julio just flames out, then that's a huge issue, and that's going to be the subject of our shows for many, many weeks, and that's not a good thing. That's not what we want to talk about, but it's obviously something that could happen, and that's you got to know that going in. But
that's why on the front end, I think we all have to try to agree that is this a sound thinking when it happens, right? It's one thing to second guess after it doesn't go well.
Sure.
But like just like with Clowney and all of the things that we've discussed, like, did you really have a problem with it? Nobody has everything go right. Fair to say? Like you even
if
the
there
Patriots.
Is,
like,
let me know. And
right.
I'd
like
to...
even the Patriots, like the gold standard. We were talking about some of the draft picks that they made.
They've missed a lot.
Even the best teams miss on a lot of moves. Not everything works out. It's your batting average overall. And it's kind of like what is sound thinking at the time? And what was a little bit, whoa, I don't know about that. Like the Vic Beasley is the one we always talk about. You know, that was one where from the very start it was like, ooh, really? Is that gonna work? And our suspicions were upheld. But here, I don't think that you go into it with any. If it goes wrong with Bud Dupree and Julio Jones specifically, I just think at the end of the day, you say, hey, it was a good idea. There's risk in everything you do. It just didn't work out.
So a texter just wrote in on the text line driven by WilsonCountyHonda.com. Says, Chiefs, they can't even beat the Browns or the Bengals.
Huh?
They did lose to the Bengals. They beat the Browns, but they lost to the Bengals.
Who lost to the Bengals?
The Titans.
Oh, I thought you were talking about the Chiefs.
No. He's saying Chiefs, ? Because we're talking about that's who you have to get through in the AFC. But I do think that that's a thing that they have to get past. There have been times when they have played teams that they have absolutely, and I know it's the NFL. I get it. You know, any given Sunday. But they've lost to teams they have no business losing to.
Yeah, but that's going to happen.
Okay, so I understand. I get that. But
the Browns, they had no business losing to. The Browns were the closest team to beating the Chiefs in the playoffs.
They were. So,
I mean, so what about that? What
that's
about
a totally
them
a Browns and the Bengals are two completely different teams. I don't understand what he's talking about there.
But
the Bengals was a bad loss. But who? You know, a lot of teams have that.
Well, the Titans did beat the Chiefs last year, did they not?
They did.
Okay.
In the regular season.
They did?
Wait, no. That was a year before.
You're talking about 2 years ago.
That was 2019?
Yeah.
No, that was the game here that we did reference. No. Yeah.
Yeah, and they beat the Browns in 2019. And then it's hard to keep track.
Well, 2019 was the opening day up there.
Yeah, and they browbeat them.
Second half, they just got away. They just annihilated them.
You look at this schedule is the toughest schedule they've had in the last several years, because that's what comes with winning. When you're successful, when you win the division, your schedule gets tougher. So there's just, you know, like the games against, you know, the Jets, the Jags.
All right.
They got to take care of those.
They're 18-8 since Tannehill became the starter. That's a pretty good winning percentage. So I don't think we need to get bogged down about an occasional loss to a team. There's not that many. There's only been eight since total since Tannehill has been the quarterback.
Well, they did annihilate the Bills last year when nobody thought they were going to win that game, including me.
Very true.
They were off for like 2 weeks.
They beat the Colts in Indy. Like they've beaten some pretty good teams.
They've
won,
annihilated
a lot of their games.
The Colts in Indy. That's right. Yeah. They beat Baltimore in Baltimore in the regular season.
Yes, they did.
And that one looked hairy for a minute.
So don't you think it's a little nitpicky to say, hey, they can't even beat the Bengals? That's
true,
a little nitpicky.
But,
well, it's, I mean, everybody's got that on their schedule, right? I mean, I don't have the Packers' law. I mean, I know they're few and far between some of their lot, but, I mean, it's just that's the NFL. I mean, you have weird – I mean, the Rams lost to the Jets last year at home. I mean, how do you explain that? Rams were a pretty good team.
Right. We had quite a few conversations about the Jets. Those types of games. There seemed to be one every other week, right? Just really stunning losses. Like, what?
The Steelers went to Monday Night Football at the end of the season and lost to the Bengals without Joe Burrow. Remember that game?
Yeah.
That was ugly. Ugly. So, I mean, that stuff happens. I think for this discussion, really, when you think about the misses and you think about the things that could have easily dumped this team's season, you have to credit the coaching staff. You have to credit the head coach and the coaching staff for willingness. I mean, because you've heard me say, I quite honestly, they have defied logic at times on how in the world this stuff has not bit them in the butt. Like, how can you have the worst kicking game in the league and that doesn't come back to bite you? How do you have a defense that cannot get off the field or not get the quarterback and that come back to bite you? Now you could say ultimately, well, it did bite them. They didn't win the Super Bowl. Okay, yeah. I'm talking about why didn't the season finish 5-11? You know, that's what I'm talking about. Like, why were they a non-playoff team? Like, that stuff usually makes a team not playing football in January. They were able to overcome all their deficiencies and still find a way to win a division or still find a way to make a run to the AFC title game when they were clearly not a perfect team. And I know you could say, well, most teams aren't perfect, but you know what I mean. I mean, they don't have the Patrick Mahomes. They don't have the Aaron Rodgers. They don't have the Tom Brady. And those teams, you can mask a lot of warts when you have those players. They don't have that player. Now they've got players at different positions that kind of fit that mold, as we talked about with Derrick Henry, right?
Derrick Henry can probably mask a few things for a running back. Mm-hmm. But I see where you're going with that. And I look at John Robinson and I say, you know, is he working hard to address issues that have had them falling just short and less short, you know, progressively? They've gotten into the mix, right? He's taken them from a very mediocre franchise that was going through a really down time to a consistent winner, and each year taking a step further, in my opinion, in terms of how close you are to really winning it. In the last 2 years, they've been in the mix, right? You still can probably say, well, on paper, they're not quite there.
No, they won the division.
I mean, that's what I'm saying. But if the standard is winning the Super Bowl and you got the Chiefs, who are a pretty unique team with one of those guys you're talking about, Darren, Patrick Mahomes, who masks all kinds of things. He makes everybody on the field better. That's a high bar. But in a deal where it was not easy to manipulate that salary cap, he comes out of there with, okay, you've addressed the pass rush. You're going to try something different there. That's a pretty big shakeup with Bud Dupree. That's a splash. You know, they've tried to shake up the secondary for better or worse. It may be better, maybe worse, but it was not easy to do that. You didn't have unlimited funds to do that, but they've done it, and now they have added Julio Jones. So are they trying to address things to get better? Yeah. And is there risk involved? No doubt. But I don't have a problem with that. I like that he's trying. If he didn't do anything, he'd be getting criticized a lot more, don't you think?
Oh, I sure. Said it earlier.
If he came in there with the same defense as last year?
Oh. But on paper, at least, it looks like he improved the defense.
Well, they got a chance. We don't know how it's going to work, but I think it's got a chance to be better.
It's got to play out.
Didn't I say right after the Julio Jones trade, like, we're blessed in this market. We got two general managers that are not afraid to go for it.
Yeah.
They're not sitting on their hands. I mean, and some of them work out, big splashes work out, and some of them don't. That's part of trades. That's part of sports. That's part of being a general manager, as we just stated earlier. Nobody's perfect, and there are misses with even the good teams. It's just easy to look past when they're winning, right? When they have success, you just look past the misses. But teams miss all the time. even the good ones, they miss all the time. And if they were bad, they would be magnified, right? But because they're good, it just kind of gets brushed under the rug. It's like, oh, well, but why would you talk about it? If everything's working out, why would you talk about the failures? That's not how it works. It's like, how many cancers do you know in the winning locker room? Cancers usually happen in the locker room how? On teams that are bad, right? Teams that start losing. Mm-hmm. Teams that where it's not going anywhere, and that's where cancers drive in a locker room. I mean, when do you ever hear of cancers in winning locker rooms? It happens sometimes. I remember the Blackhawks. Remember the whole mess they had going on, Patrick Sharp and all the scuttlebutt and stuff that was being floated out there, and it was like a mess behind the scenes with teammates, and guess what? They didn't move anybody. And what, didn't they go on and win the cup that year?
Pretty
sure they did.
Yeah. And that in that 2015?
I think so, yeah. And remember, that was, it was a mess. I mean, at least if you believed the stuff that was out there.
Wasn't Kimmo Tiininen on that team? Wasn't that his?
He got a ring on that 2015 team. Yeah. He was not involved in the stuff that Darren's referencing.
The point is, I mean, he was there.
You rarely hear about that on winning teams, right? You only hear about stuff like that on teams where everything's going south.
The 70s Steinbrenner Yankees had plenty of stuff going on.
They had issues?
Charlie Finley's A's in the 70s. There's been documentaries on these things. You know, every group's different. The Cowboys of the early 90s, I think they had some stuff going on, which was kind of a circus. But how about the 86 Mets? You know, some tumultuous things. But I think the Titans are a pretty tight-knit group. You know, I wouldn't you say? I think Mike Vrabel's a good leader. They've got a culture in there. They've got an identity that I think has been built over time.
Yeah, I think that's a good point. They definitely have a culture that was missing for a while, and I think
it was missing for a long time.
And Mike Mularkey deserves credit for starting that.
I think he built a foundation. Yeah,
he did. He did, because Wisenhunt, there wasn't one.
They were starting from scratch.
I think there was with Munchak, but with the Bud Adams dying, and there wasn't any leadership above that. You know, you had incompetence at general manager. It just, that was stacked against them. But then it started to turn around. Amy Adams Strunk takes over. Mike Mularkey is able to do that. And then Vrabel and Robinson have just continued it and built it further. But there wasn't culture for a long time after the glory days when they first got here. And you know, that's on the players, too. The players have to help build the culture. You got to get the right guys in that can do that. And I believe that they have that now.
So it felt like a rudderless ship. It really did.
No, it was. It felt that way because it was. That's exactly what it was.
It just felt like it was out there drifting with the tide. No direction at all.
And not the Crimson Tide.
No. RTR.
RTR.
I want to talk to you about my friends over at Cold Springs MD.
Thank you.
Dr. Jeffrey Lodge, the board-certified physician over there, his wife Daphne, the registered nurse, and their experienced staff would love to handle any thing that you need to have addressed, whether it's maybe you've tacked on some unwanted pounds, and we've all been known to do that as adults, right? Well, weight loss management is important to them, and they've got programs and products and people that can get you headed right back in the right direction, okay? Shed those pounds, and they can help you. Rejuvenation, your appearance should be important. It's important to me, and it's important to a lot of you out there, and it gets harder as we get older. But you could sit down with their staff and talk about PRP, hair removal, Botox, hormone therapy. Maybe you've been feeling a little bit off lately. You haven't felt yourself. You've never experienced that before, and you're trying to figure out what the heck is going on. Well, you could discuss BHRT, testosterone, estrogen. Get your levels checked. Maybe your levels have dipped, which tends to happen as we age. Could be dipping to an all-time low, which could affect you in all of these areas. They've got a state-of-the-art facility over there in Cool Springs at 1642 Westgate Circle, where I'll be headed after the show today, and they can help you. And if you need to schedule an appointment or a consultation, all you have to do is pick up the phone and dial this number, 615-283-7291. That's 283-7291, or you can learn everything about them by going to their website, coolspringsmd.com. I've got it on. They replayed the Vanderbilt NC State game, so I was watching that during the first half of the show. Now they're replaying the Tennessee Texas game, and it's right at the point in the third inning of bases loaded, nobody out. Oh, this is still so painful to watch, especially if you're a Vols fan.
Yet you're watching it.
Yeah, there's not really anything else on. I'm not really into
there's
the,
soccer, Euro.
I'm not really.
We got that going.
Got
here.
A thriller in Sweden, Poland right now.
Yes, we do. Yeah. Elijah is very, very into this one.
Keep me posted on that. It's just, gosh, that's painful. And they get out of it. Now two outs, and they're going to fly out. It's like, oh, gosh. Brutal. So, you guys watching the end of the Suns-Clippers game last night?
Full disclosure, I was long asleep.
Really?
The weekend caught up to me, and so I passed out pretty early. I got a solid night's sleep, which I needed, so I'm ready to go. I had tapped out, but I woke up to the group text with you guys talking about it.
Pretty impressive. Like, how many times do you ever see a play like that, like, actually executed and work?
It's one of the best, like, out-of-bounds underplays to win a game I think I've ever seen drawn
right
up.
What was it, 0.7?
I think the game was 0.2 of a second left. So thinking it being 9.9, but
that's right. Point nine on the clock. It was 0.8. They went and checked, which is a whole part of the drama, right? There was like replay reviews.
Yeah,
it took forever. Jeff Van Gundy was losing his mind.
He was.
He says this every year.
It doesn't take much to do that.
But he's right. He's dead on right with what he's saying. The replay system, it's ridiculous. It's getting out of control. You can't just ask and have every play reviewed. There's got to be a challenge system that they put in there.
He went on SVP on SportsCenter afterwards, and he was just beside himself. I mean, just livid about how long. He's like, the last 30 seconds took 30 minutes.
It did. He's not wrong. It's a joke. And there was that play that happened in the Texas Tech Virginia NCAA final where a guy knocks it out of bounds, Patrick Beverly, knocks the ball out of Devin Booker's hands. But because when you super slowed it down, you know, he kind of hits it up, and so the ball technically rolls off of Booker's fingers. They say it's off Booker, which that's not basketball. That's not how the game works.
That's the right call, though, isn't it?
Well,
I mean,
it has to
be. A referee can see it.
It has to be that way, but that's not the game. If you're playing pickup game, if you're playing in real time, if you're playing in any other time where that play is not reviewed, nobody even thinks twice about it. It's off of Beverly.
Well,
he knocked it out of bounds.
Finals. There's more at stake than
game. I don't buy that at all. That's a bunch of baloney. That's just not how the game
works. There's a lot more at stake in the Western Conference Finals.
No, but that ball is off Beverly. That ball is not off Booker. I'm sorry. That's just how basketball is.
But if you're a ref and you look at that and you see where it goes off him,
I understand. They have to call it that way, but that's not the spirit of the rule, as Van Gundy pointed out. But that was just another element of the drama. There were several very difficult calls that sort of had to be reviewed, but I think you should have to challenge, and you should only get a certain amount of challenges, like a football game or like a hockey game, where you just don't have this unlimited, just look at the ref and say, hey, I think you need to look at that. Oh, okay. And then we'd go delay the game again. Because as Van Gundy pointed out, and this gets back to the original with the out-of-bounds play, it's a free timeout. They had no timeouts, the Suns. But because they reviewed the play,
they're able to
draw up that brilliant play. And it's an awesome, it's an amazing pass, right? A perfect play, perfect execution. Ayton is an amazing
by Booker.
Great screen. By the way, the guy on the Clippers needs to switch the screen. Right.
If he switches the screen,
that's basketball 101. If a guy's coming off for a lob and a dunk, you have to switch the screen.
But if you switch the screen, though, too, it's a guard that's trying to jump up with DeAndre Ayton to try to deflect
Zubac
probably still had your best
seven
bet.
Footer.
Yeah, and he almost got there. But I don't know. I can't give up that play. Van Gundy actually called the play before it happened. He said, I think you got to lob it here to Ayton. He was dead on right.
And
it was just awesome commentary.
So it was an amazing play. It was awesome in ending to a game, but this. Here comes my high school coach coming back. Paul George has paid how much?
He blew it on multiple occasions last night.
Dude, isn't he like an 85% free throw shooter?
Hit your free throws. We're not even having this conversation if you hit your free throws.
Wasn't that like the first time he'd missed two?
Yeah.
The whole season?
He went 5 for 10 in the game.
Right, he did. He did. But wasn't that like the first time he had missed both free throw, like consecutive free throws on the same trip the entire season or something? I mean, he was 86% free throw shooter.
Yeah, you can't.
He missed them both. That's brutal.
And you talk about moments that could come back to bite you. That one right there, because now Phoenix is up 2-0, and Chris Paul's coming back.
Yeah, they're toast. They're toast. I don't think Kawhi's playing. And
yeah, what's up with that?
So yeah, let's talk about this. So what last week, all these outlets, and I just read what the outlets were saying. I mean, Sports Illustrated, they're all saying, hey, breaking news, Kawhi Leonard torn ACL.
I never saw a torn ACL. They fear a possible ACL injury.
No. I saw torn ACL.
I saw those words too.
Many national outlets. Torn ACL.
Yeah, I never saw that. Because he wasn't officially ruled out until a couple hours before the game yesterday.
Yeah, I've never seen in basketball where you have a torn ACL and you're not automatically out. So if it was confirmed, a torn ACL, I don't know how he could even be contemplating playing.
Well, clearly nobody's confirmed that because they just keep reporting
every
game.
You're saying somebody just say it wrong?
I'm saying there were outlets on Twitter.
I remember getting the notification from ESPN saying torn ACL.
Torn ACL.
Really? Torn?
Yes. Okay. Yes. I saw several national outlets saying, breaking news, Clippers, Kawhi Leonard, torn ACL. And I was like, whoa. I remember I read it on the air, and you guys were like, whoa.
Yeah.
I mean –
but then it became sprain.
Then it was like, right. Then it was, right. It's
which
just
I get,
a knee injury.
Second opinions and what have you. You know, initial reports aren't always right.
Well, second opinions, or was that, I mean, bad journalism?
Wrong?
Like,
yeah.
Where did that come from? Like, how did you, where, who
but
did
it
you
was
get
Woj,
that from?
It was Woj that put it out there, I thought.
Was it? Yeah. I don't remember. I mean, I saw several. It wasn't just one outlet. I know one of them was Sporting News. Another one was Sports Illustrated. ESPN, like you said, I mean, I saw multiple outlets reporting torn ACL, and the next thing you know, it's like every game, it's like Kawhi Leonard's been ruled out. It's like, wait a minute. I thought you said he had a torn ACL.
Well, regardless of that, I gotta give the Clippers credit for not having a player like that and being as competitive as they were last night. They really had a lock on that game. If George hits the free throws, they might have done it. Of course, there was so much controversy leading up to that. The Paul George missed free throws were right after the bad call, where Beverly talks the referee into going to look at it, and you find out that it was the Texas Tech Virginia play, and that's how they got the ball. So Twitter was going bonkers. I didn't tweet about that, but I was seeing everybody who agreed with me. That's not basketball, baloney. I agree with Van Gundy, and then of course it was like karma. Game doesn't lie. You know, when he missed the free throws, it was like justice was done when he missed the two free throws. But it was incredible, the drama. Great game.
I think the Clippers' run is over.
It doesn't look good.
That was their game.
But they're going home, and they were down 2-0 in the last two series.
I know. Suns are just better, and they're getting Chris Paul back. They're just better. Elijah, do you agree?
Pretty impressive.
Yeah, the Suns are a perfect example right now of like confidence is one of those dangerous things for a team in the playoffs. Like they've won 9 straight, and
a lot of young
played,
players too. A lot of young players.
This Clippers team is still really deep. Without
who was the
Kawhi.
Guy that filled in for? He had 29 last.
Cameron
night.
Payne.
Yeah,
Lauzan, great, and from Memphis. Cam Payne came
I
in.
Did,
and
I did.
Lit
a
it up.
State championship game at Lipscomb on. I think it was on TV back then. It was Lauzan against the USN Tigers in a surprise under Adam Sohn, made it to the finals, and Cameron Payne took over the game.
Mm. He was incredible last night.
How about that?
And where did he go, Murray State?
He ended up playing at Murray State.
Yeah,
yep, Murray got State. Drafted. It was actually a lottery pick and played with Oklahoma City for a while, and he's kind of been a journeyman until the Suns picked him up last year to fill in a roster spot to go into the bubble. He was out like a year and a half.
Murray State, where lottery picks are bred, you know? Come on.
They had a few over the years.
They have.
Murray State basketball. He played great last night. He's just one of those guys, right? They've got a number of them. Bridges from Villanova.
Awful draft trade from the Sixers.
Yeah, but it's an interesting team because it's not built like the super team, go get the three free agents and leverage your way to find a way to get the big high price and the cap. It's just a well-built team that has a chance to win the whole thing.
They haven't missed on draft picks. Well, that's probably the big thing.
Had, yeah. Exactly. They've had high draft picks because they were terrible, and they've hit.
Right.
That's right. That's exactly right. Isn't that crazy what can happen to your franchise when you hit on those high draft picks?
I know. What a concept.
What a concept.
Is Aiden making more money for the Suns than he did for Arizona when he played for?
Well. That's at Willie D, 1025.
If he did, it's not by much.
We will come back. Vanderbilt, there is no afternoon game in Omaha, only a night game, and it'll be Vanderbilt and Stanford. We will talk to Andrew Allegretta. He is the Vanderbilt play-by-play man. We will talk to him on the other side. We remember him and Kevin Ingram had the big announcement. We talked with Kevin. Now we'll talk with Andrew to start the final hour of Darren Donick and Chase. That's next.